up, America. It's time for Michael Dean After Dark. I'm your host, Michael Dean, Freedom Fiend, and this is the Late Night Feisty Liberty Show. We have a rotating stable of interesting insomniac co-hosts. Plus, we leave the phone lines open. So if the hamster in your brain is keeping you up, please call in. That's right. Cool cats and kitty pups. This is Mr. Michael Dean doing the late night thing on Michael Dean After Dark. It's not a cold night here in Wyoming. Every show we've done so far, all 16 of them of this new show, I've started with, hold your kitties tight. It's a cold night here in Wyoming, and it's like warm. It just turns suddenly warm. And I like it. You know, there's a picture. You know, Nikki, darling. How you doing, Nikki, darling?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm good. I'm pretty feisty and nifty. Yeah. You know, there's a picture going around of a bunch of bison supposedly stampeding after an earthquake in Yellowstone. And it went viral. And people thought it meant that they knew something the people didn't know and the scientists didn't know. And there was going to be a volcanic eruption that was going to destroy Wyoming. Did you see that footage?
I did, but I didn't read any articles about it.
Yeah, that was some idiot tourist, because they do that every spring, and they weren't running for their lives. They were gambling happily because winter was over.
Ah, okay.
They run on the road. They were like, they're running on the road. Something's horrible. I have footage I shot 4 years ago at Yellowstone on my YouTubes of them doing the same thing. They're not going quite as fast, but they're on the road. There's a bison jam. It's like a, you know, traffic jam.
Oh, yeah. They do that every year.
They do it every day. They do like the 8 a.m. bison jam, the noon bison jam, the 1 p.m. bison jam. No, they're just like, hey, but man, we're on the road.
Don't they do it like every year and they have tourist watch and stuff? It's supposed to mimic from back in the day when they would round up the bison?
No, not in Yellowstone. They wouldn't do that in Yellowstone. They let them pretty much run wild and free. There may be something in the Mountain West where they recreate stampedes. I know in Cody, Wyoming, they have like fake shootouts in the summer of like,
cool
reenactor cowboy crap. But no, okay, here's the lead that I'm burying is Bill Buepert, who is a co-host on this show, is safe, but he had a heart attack. But he's getting better. I spoke with him this morning. He's recovering. They put a stent in, and he says he feels better, and it might actually help his energy. So, yeah, there you go, our friend Bill. We like him a lot, and our thoughts go out to him, and
Definitely. We
hope he gets better, because he's going to go to Porkfest, and because, you know, because he's a friend, and we don't want him. We want him around for a long time. Yeah.
Definitely.
And the other thing is, I knew about this on Saturday, but he didn't want me to tell anybody until he was out of the woods. And I don't blame him, because the last thing you want when you're in the hospital is, no matter how good people's thoughts are, the last thing you want is 100 people calling you and emailing you and saying, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you okay? It's like when it's a life and death situation or a life threatening situation, you don't want to be talking to anybody but friends and family, you know, close friends and family. So, yeah, he let me know. I mean, he might not have even let me know, because his wife let me know because he had a show scheduled and she wanted me to know to get someone to fill in. So I got Lou to fill in yesterday. I got him 2 days before that. But then my internets went out, because the internets in Wyoming are powered by an antelope running on a wheel chasing a hamster, and the hamster got mentally ill. So it had to be taken for treatment for 5 hours. So the antelope just took a nap and rested up. So I called Nikki and Lou on my cell phone and then called GCN and set it up for you guys to fly solo together. And you kicked butt, man. I was really proud of you guys. You did great.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. We were both saying afterwards that we were a little nervous, but we had a great time.
Yeah, I think one of the secrets of doing radio to me with most people is you need two people.
Yeah.
You know, if I, you know, if all of a sudden you lost your internet, I would probably be able to talk to the end of this segment solo when there's an ad, but I would be frantically on the phone trying to get someone, get a hold of you or get someone to fill in. Yeah, I'm not Rush Limbaugh. Not that he's a great man or anything, but he can be a blowhard for 3 hours without bouncing off of anybody. I can't do that, man.
That probably takes years of experience too. I mean, Ben Stone can definitely do it.
I think it takes the ability to talk to the voices in your head. That's the other person. Ben Stone cannot do that. Ben Stone's podcasts are not recorded live. And he takes about 3 hours to record a 1 hour podcast.
Does he?
And then he edits it. Yeah. And he has notes and he writes it out. Yeah. He does good. He does good on a live radio with the Fiends or with me or with Nima, but he's not a solo cat either. And he was actually really nervous to do live radio for the first time with us. But he's gotten used to it to the point where he's filling in this Sunday on the Fiends. This Sunday on the Fiends, Nima's going camping with his wife and baby, and I'm filling in with Ben, or Ben's filling in for Nima, and then we're going to have teaching hospital moments of the first half hour is going to be Diana as the third wheel, and the second half hour is going to be Mark from Canada as the third wheel. Now, he's not even one of the regular hosts on here, but we had him on as a third wheel with Bill Bupert the other night. He called in on Skype. He sounded so good. He's using one of these same mics. He was calling from his truck. He's a long-haul truck driver, and he just pulled over, and he has the high-speed internet you pay extra for, you know, anywhere in the country kind of thing in Canada. And the thing is, the inside of a modern long-haul trucker truck is like a recording studio. It's totally soundproof from the outside world, and it's totally sound-conditioned inside. That's how a lot of vehicles are, but especially big trucks.
That's really cool, and you're moving at all time. Well, not while you're recording, but it's pretty cool.
Right, so we might be grooming him for a part-time replacement here. The whole thing about this show, it didn't start out with this in mind, but as soon as I started doing it, I realized this is a teaching hospital. This is bringing up the next generation of radio hosts, and it's bringing up the hosts that are going to like themselves train people too. It's kind of like Amway. It's like a pyramid scheme, except you don't have to give me money. And Nick, you've done radio before, right? You had a show on LRN, but it was like three or four people, right?
Yeah. And before that, I did a Saturday night vaping show, and we used to get like 2,000 viewers.
Yeah.
It's insane.
But this is different. This is like real radio.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep. And I'm really proud of what you guys did. I actually listened to you guys on my cell phone on the call-in number for LRN.
Oh, really?
Because I didn't have internet. And I guess you can get internet on my phone, but I don't have a plan for it. So literally to log on the internet for like a minute would have cost me like $10 to log on, and then like a dollar a minute or something after that. So I just listened on my cell phone, which I never use. I checked the minutes before I did it. I'm like, can I listen to this whole show? And it's like, this month you've used 11 minutes of your available 2,000 minutes. I'm like, all right. And I listened to you guys. I called in too. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, it was great. I really appreciate you calling us up. It was fun.
Yeah, I saw my own band play one time. It was kind of interesting. I do all this media, and then I listen to it later, but I never get to listen to it live. The Freedom Fiends are on the radio in my town, and it's delayed 2 hours. So I actually, the publisher of Talkers Magazine said that I am probably the only talk radio host in the country that actually can hear himself on the radio in his hometown, because most syndicated talk radio show hosts are either, if they're on in the town they're in, they're live, or they're not on in their town because they're syndicated, you know, from some other place. So it's pretty cool. I actually bought a radio so I could do it.
Wow. I wonder how many people actually have radios in their house.
Probably not that many. Most people still have in their car, but that's changing. Yeah. And there's people that have radios, but they're in the pawn shop. And, you know, if that's the case, if you have friends and neighbors who their radio's probably in a pawn shop, when we come on the radio, you should round up your neighbors and bring them over to sit around the radio and listen to us.
Wish I could do that here.
What do you mean?
Well, I just couldn't get anybody who would want to come and listen.
Oh, you told me, tell me the story about telling your family what Bitcoin was. Cause I had an experience tonight of like trying to explain to someone what Bitcoin was, who didn't, he was intrigued by it and not against it. And he's a retired computer programmer, but he was like, well, I guess this might catch on someday. And I'm like, dude, millions of people use Bitcoin daily for commerce. And there are, you know, like 10 major corporation internet sites that take it, you know, for trade right now. And he's like, really? I didn't know. But tell me about trying to tell your family what Bitcoin is.
Well, I showed up to a family party in my Bitcoin's Not Bomb t-shirt, you know, the shirts made by Davy Barker.
Yes.
And one of my cousins asked me about it and said it was quite an interesting graphic. It's a graphic of a plane dropping Bitcoins from the sky. And I explained to her that it was a digital currency. It was it's decentralized. It's not regulated by the Federal Reserve or anything. And you can use it online. And she said, oh, do they have like paper? Is it like paper? You can trade like regular paper money? And I was like, no. I mean, they make some physical Bitcoins, but you don't see, they're very rare. You don't see those. And you have like a little online wallet, which is sort of like almost like your PayPal account, only it's decrypted and nobody can get to it. And you have, it's anonymous. And she was just like, oh, okay, that's pretty interesting. They didn't really care, which was good. I thought I was going to get a really bad response, like, oh, isn't what you're doing illegal?
It's probably telling families about it is probably like telling them about the rock bands you listen to. You know,
yeah.
Like, they probably like some rock music, but they don't get it. They don't get what's going on today. The easiest way I would, if I were to try to tell my dad about it, I'd probably say it was like emailing money because he uses email, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I think they're just happy that I'm not like on drugs and, or in jail or something.
Yeah. And that's something we're going to talk a little bit about more tonight is talking to people about new concepts who completely don't understand it and different tactics for it. Because Nikki and I have different tactics for talking to statists about why they shouldn't be statists. We'll be back with more on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. This is what radio sounds like now.
Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address and our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com. Yeah. It's April 8th, 2014. On this date, in 1860, a man named Edouard Léon Scott de Martinville recorded the oldest known recording, legible recording of a human voice. Do you know that, Nikki?
No, I didn't. What was it recorded on?
A photo autogram. Here, I'll play it. It's barely legible, but lips are barely understandable. But and it probably won't sound even. It'll sound even worse. So I'm just holding the mic up to the speaker. But here you go. It didn't help that he wasn't a very good singer.
No, but it sounds so creepy, like a ghost recording or something.
Yeah, it kind of is. And it's it was not actually played back from the device it was recorded on because the device no longer exists. It was a visual scan with a computer of a wax recording and then played back from that. You know, like there's Edison cylinders from the turn of the century from like 1900 that are still playable on existing Edison machines too. But, and they sound better than that, but that's pretty cool. As a recording engineer myself and audio aficionado, today is the day that was recorded in 1860. And, you know, I was thinking about the amount of stuff I do and go through like the amount of knowledge and skill that I use and process each day, the amount of knowledge and facts and things I process and input, and the amount of skill that I have in a variety of, you know, based mostly computer things. But, you know, before computers, I was doing recordings and photography back in the day in a dark room and on reel-to-reels and things like that. So I like my age. I'll be 50 soon, and I lived through the analog and got really good at it, and then got on computers and got really good really quick at it all. But I was trying to think, like, explain if I could, if my 91-year-old dad, actually he's 93 now, my 93-year-old dad were sitting next to me and I were trying to explain things to him. Like, I was thinking, okay, if I showed him that, you know, I could probably like make a recording of that recording that I just played, pull it into SoundForge and remove the noise on it. I could do that in my sleep. If I did that with my dad sitting next to me, he would think I invented that. Like, I'd be hard pressed to explain to him, no, there's millions of people in the world that can do this. You know, I'm smart, but I'm not unique. I mean, he has a computer. He can barely use email. He cannot surf the web. And, you know, when I was talking about the guy who didn't know about Bitcoin, like, I didn't mean to compare him to a statist. He's not a statist. He's a liberty guy. But, you know, his like username is John Galt. So he's obviously at least a Rand fan. So,
yeah,
but, you know, explaining something that's like second nature to us is difficult. And you and I take different tacks with it. I think my tack with it is the macho libertarian flash. Like, I'll just, if someone says to me, like, well, do you think that marijuana should be legalized? I go straight to, yeah, and I think that heroin should be freely available in vending machines. And I'm not kidding. I'm serious. There's no ethical reason why that's not true. There are things that could be done for parents to protect their kids from that, et cetera. But it doesn't require a massive police state that kicks in doors, because that does far more harm than drug addiction ever has done.
Yeah.
But I don't soft sell it with people. I'm not mean about it, but I don't want to. The main thing is, I don't want to waste my time with anybody who defends the state like they're defending their family. And I don't have time to sit down and explain to them, you know, who would build the roads, because I'm not the person in charge of central planning in a society that would not have central planning. So I just, if someone asked me who would build the roads and I start to explain it and they're like, oh, interesting, and they want to know more, if they ask a stupid question but they want to know more, I'll be glad to take some time with them. But if they get mad at me and start like fighting me on it, I don't do it, man. I just won't do it. But you, yeah. Will you do that with people that fight you on it, or do you just walk away?
I try to talk to them and I try to reason with them. I've found, like, with my father, my father overreacts like crazy. When it comes down to things like property taxes, I know that it's customary that some libertarians will say, well, if you don't pay your taxes, they'll put you in a cage. And my dad doesn't like that word cage. He doesn't think that you'll ever be put in a cage for that.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah. But I can explain the rest when we come back.
Yeah, we're talking about the power of words here. Words are powerful things, and that's why I make so many of them come out of my mouth every day. I'm an anarcho-yactilivist. Yactilivist.
This radio show is called Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com to help keep it drone-proof.
You've read books, attended lectures.
Would you like to advertise your product or service to a large built-in audience of liberty-loving consumers who truly dig the free market? Freedom Fiends is now selling ad space. Slots are reasonably priced, but limited, so contact us today. Write the Fiends at talkback@freedomfiends.com. That's talkback@freedomfiends.com.
Yeah, and you're listening to the song Hate Fed Love by the band Bomb, going all the way back to 1991. That's me on bass and a little bit of vocals there. That's what I did before I was on radio. I made loud, sleazy rock and roll music and played it in the gin mills of the world and caught the fancy of pretty young ladies and met them.
Very nice.
I met them. Yes, it's radio. I'll just say, yes, I met them. I recognize that girl, officer. So, Nikki, we're talking about family. Family is there's a line on there's a line on Metalocalypse. Did you ever watch that show?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a line that the Swiss character, the lead guitarist Squiscar, says, "Families is the peoples that you hates." I don't hate my family. I just feel like I'm a reptile that crawled away from them as soon as I was born, and I kind of feel like they're a different species than me.
Yeah, well, I was adopted, so I kind of feel like I've always been kind of an outcast of sorts. So
I was convinced I was adopted. That's how like distant I felt from them my whole life. But the older I get, the more I look like my dad and my mother. So I'm not adopted.
Yeah, well, liberally, I guess in a liberal sense, I'm like my parents because they're both artists of some sort. But
how is that liberal?
Else, well, I get. And this was another discussion I was having the other day with someone, too. Somebody automatically assumed I was a liberal because I went to art school. And so I asked them why they thought that. And they said, well, I just figured artsy people were tolerant and open-minded and like peace-loving. And I was like, oh, I'm all of those things, but I'm not a liberal.
Liberals aren't those things. Liberals want to enforce those things by throwing you into a cage and putting a gun to your head if you don't want to do those things.
But that's deep, and that's what they don't get. You have to really take it down to the root, like I did with my father when it came to property taxes. And what I asked him was, I said, when you finally pay off your home, are you free from paying for this home? And he said, well, yeah. And I said, well, what about your property taxes? And he said, well, I guess I have to pay those for the rest of my life. And I said, okay, so you're not free. And what happens if you stop paying them? And he goes, I never will. And I said, but what happens if you do? And he said, well, they'll send me papers. And I said, okay, what if you ignore those papers? And he said, I don't know. Maybe they'll come and take my house. And I said, and what happens if you don't want to leave your house? And he said, well, I guess they'll shoot me. And he got it. He finally got it, like the end point.
And do you think that that delineation, that logical progression, is something to avoid or to use when talking to people who don't get it?
No, that's what I use. But I in my conversations, I try not to call anyone a statist, and I try not to say, oh, you'll be thrown in a cage, or the proverbial gun in the room. Like, I try not to refer to government as that. Like, when I'm around my friends, sure, but
well,
with other people.
No, let's go back to – I understand the difference. But I basically use the same wording with anybody that I do with friends. And this is not the argument you and I are having, but the difference in our progression. Now, I like what you did about your dad. You kind of let him come to the conclusion rather than feeding it all to him, although you gave him the questions.
Yeah.
But I actually think that explanation of the state as if you don't pay your taxes or obey stupid laws, they'll send papers to your house. If you ignore the papers, they'll come back with papers in person. If you ignore that guy, they'll come back with papers and some men with guns, you know, some police or federal agents or whatever. And if you ignore them and tell them to go away, they'll come back with more men with guns. And if you resist, they will do everything up to the point of kill you. You know, they will put a gun to your head. They'll drag you out kicking and screaming, and they'll throw you into a jail cell, which is a cage.
Yes.
Now, I don't want to soften any of that when dealing with people, because I think telling people that a jail cell is a cage and pointing out how most people in jails, or a lot of people in jails, don't deserve to be in a cage and haven't had done anything where there was an actual victim. I think that that's a really valuable thing. I actually think that is the most valuable single thing in modern libertarianism. Other than, here's the thing, basically modern libertarianism, true anarcho-capitalism, true voluntarism, true libertarianism, all boils down to the non-aggression principle, which is don't initiate aggression with people. But it also boils down to avoiding what I call the aggression principle. And that's my new name for an old concept, which is that 3 or 4 sentence delineation of, if you don't pay your taxes or obey the law, they'll send men with papers. If you ignore the men with papers, they'll send men with guns. If you tell them to go to heck, they will come into your house against your will, put a gun to your head, and throw you to the ground and either kill you or take you to a cage. That simple progression. Now, here's the interesting thing. I have heard every libertarian I've ever heard It's really libertarian. I've heard that out of their mouth, that 3 or 4 sentence description. And I actually, you know, and I gave it a name at one point. I said, that's the aggression principle. That's what the state runs by. Libertarianism runs on the non-aggression principle. It's the opposite of that. The thing that really baffled me for a while was I was like, okay, everybody says that like it's gospel, and it is. But who said it first? And I kind of had an open source discussion on the Freedom Fiends for about a month and was writing to every, you know, like paragon of liberty I knew, like Stefan Molyneux, Bad Quaker, Free Talk Live guys, just like Jeff Riggenbach, who's like an old school libertarian from back in the day, like everybody I could think of. Nobody had the answer. Claire Wolf, what basically most people came up with was they named the oldest school libertarian they could think of. Like Ian Freeman named Harry Brown, who was a Libertarian mm-hmm. Party guy from like 20 years ago. That was actually kind of Ian's introduction to liberty. Like before he knew who Ron Paul was, he was working on the Harry Brown campaign like 15 years ago. And, you know, Claire Wolf named somebody at Carl Hess or something, like everybody named the person that they first learned about liberty from. And it turns out it's actually Lysander Spooner. It's from like 1890, and it's from his treatise, No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority. Okay. And it's, but in that, it's not 3 or 4 sentences. It's like a paragraph that takes up a whole page. But it boils down to it contains those exact lines. It's where he compares the state to highwaymen, which is an old term for like people that would rob you on the open road or mm-hmm. you know on the wagon trails.
Yeah, yeah.
So, in explaining this to statists, and that's our word, we use it like a dirty word. It's actually not a word that was invented by libertarians. It was invented by political science people. It is a term for people who believe in a state. Hang on a sec. I think we're getting a Skype call. Let
me check and see. Keep talking, Nikki. Well, I mean, every time I type status in, though, it gets a little red line under it as if it's not correct. so I always wondered if it was a real word or not.
Not every word is in spell check. Only the most common words are in spell check. You have to add it yourself. I've heard a couple really funny autocorrect suggestions for statism. Nima's phone, it's an Android phone. I don't know what model, but when the first time he typed statism, the first correction it suggested was state is great. That almost seems like somebody put it in there. Some statist put it in there to mess with people. But
yeah
a statist is anyone who believes that more government is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah. But when we talk about the non-aggression principle, in a way, doesn't that negate libertarianism? Because if we technically look at libertarianism, that means minimal government.
No, it doesn't.
Well,
that's what the Libertarian Party means.
Okay, but I mean, most people look at libertarians as just another branch that wants to get into office.
Nikki, most people are stupid.
I don't like to think that.
I do.
I really like to. Well, I mean, I like to use honey instead of vinegar.
Well, here's the thing. Most people are uninitiated to truth. And when people are presented with these simple arguments we're discussing of explaining all government is force, theft, aggression, and fraud, or if I'm talking to a Christian, I like to explain to them that all governments worldwide throughout history break all 10 commandments all day, every day in everything they do.
Yeah.
And, you know, people who are presented with 3 minutes of that kind of conversation and want to hear more and maybe give you some arguments that they've heard before, but keep asking questions and are not mean, I'll talk to you till the cows come home. But people who defend the state like they're defending their mother, I don't have time for it, man. They're never going to get it. I've actually written a tongue-in-cheek essay that they are a separate subspecies from us, that there are two kinds of people, homo libertitis, which are people who believe in liberty, and homo parasitis, which are people who want to feed off of the blood of others and let them work for them.
Mm.
Now, that gets into discussions of eugenics and crap like that. And I don't really believe that, but there's an interesting book called Political Ponderology that was written by a sociologist that presents the thesis that 6% of the human race are sociopaths and 15% of the human race wish to follow sociopaths. And altogether, that adds up to only 21%, but they wreck it for everybody else.
I think it's way more than 15%.
See, I thought about that too, but then I realized some people just haven't been presented with the ideas yet. And, you know, when I say things like that, I come off sounding like an evangelist. Like, well, everybody has to hear the word of Jesus, because if they don't, you know, they have to hear it. So when they die and go to the pearly gates, they'll be sent to hell because they were offered the solution and turned it down, which is what a lot of evangelists believe. And I kind of feel the same way about liberty. I'm a really smart guy. I have a lot of skills. I could be making a lot more money doing something that wasn't what I'm doing. And yet I do this because I feel driven to do it. You know, I get up and I mean, I have a neck ache right now. It's kind of hard to like sit in a chair in one place and talking to a microphone, but I'm doing it anyway. And I'm not making a cent on this show. I'm actually losing money on it. I make a little money on the Freedom Fiends, but I'm doing this because I have to do it, you know, because I feel on a mission from liberty to, you know, the same way that evangelists go door to door.
Yeah. Well, I really do think that people are more apt to come to the ideas of liberty if they themselves have been a target of the state.
That's true. But, and I've actually said that I think the war on drugs is going to be the downfall of the American government, because eventually everybody's going to be arrested for drugs or have a family member who's been arrested for drugs. Yep. We'll be back with more of how we know better than the rest of the world on Michael Dean After Dark.
You were destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Night in Wyoming anymore. This is Michael Dean. It's Michael Dean After Dark. I'm enjoying a frosty beverage. Yes. So, we're talking about, hey, Nikki, darling.
Yes.
How many status does it take to change the light bulb?
I don't know.
All of them, and then the government does it for them. I don't know. I just came up with that. I think we need more jokes. I think we need more libertarian jokes. We need more one-liner, two-liner jokes like that. I'm not the guy, though. I'm not that guy.
Yeah, I can't think of any. I don't know what's wrong with me. There's got to be some.
Hey, we got a caller. Nathan, are you there from Texas?
How many status does it take to screw in a light bulb?
How many?
One, you do it while they surround your house.
Ooh, that's pretty good. You know, I think this could be a trend. Yeah, yeah. So what's on your mind?
Well, first I wanted to say sorry, Nikki, about your identity being stolen or whatever. Is that all taken care of?
Oh, no worries. No, it's not. I have some more ABC agencies to call tomorrow.
I think they call them Alphabet Soup Agencies when I was in school.
Because if you say ABC, that's actually an agency, the Alcohol Bureau of Control, Beverage Control. It's a state agency in a lot of states.
Alphabet, ABC, whatever. People get the point.
Yeah.
News you can use.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I was really impressed that you tracked down that quote. I don't remember that from Spooner. Is that like near the top or near the front page?
No, it's in, if you search the word highwayman in the PDF of No Treason, the Constitution of No Authority, search the word highwayman. It may be used more than once in there, but it's highwayman or highwaymen is one word. It's in that section. That's how you can find it. It's actually, I believe, near the beginning of part two. It's a three-part treatise, and I believe it's near the beginning of part two, but don't quote me on that. But if you search Highwayman and Highwayman, you'll find it.
Well, I'm amazed. I always thought that was just one of those, you know, kind of spontaneous order words that just kind of arises organically, and there's no one person behind it, you know?
Yeah. Well, I guess it's like, I got to the point with libertarianism where, like, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, it was new to me. Then it became kind of old hat. Then I really put it into practice a lot. Then I started doing it on the radio. And it kind of got to the point where I was like, it was kind of like when I got sober, like, which I'm coming up on 20 years. Like, when I got sober, I worked the 12 steps. I started working with other people. I got sponsees. And then at some point, I went and read the entire history of AA and, like, wanted to know how it came to be these 12 steps and 12 traditions. So I'm always interested in the mechanics of how things work, as well as the outcome. So I'm a nerd, and you know, I outsourced it, and it was actually Nima that found it, but me and him and 40 other people were all looking for it for like a month.
Well, it's interesting you say it's kind of a nerd thing. I think a lot of libertarians are just kind of people who are curious about, like, history and, you know, things that led up to the way things are. Because you see, a lot of people will say, oh, well, when I was a kid, the state didn't, you know, search your shoes on airplanes and, you know, whatnot.
But when I was a kid, you could smoke on airplanes and probably take a gun on them.
Really?
I've smoked on airplanes. I don't smoke anymore, but yeah, I've smoked a lot on airplanes.
Oh, that's amazing. I also wanted to say my condolences to Bill Buford. And I was kind of shocked because I was reading about heart attacks a few days ago, and my understanding was if you have a heart attack, it's like a 7% or 10% survival rate.
I don't think that's true with all of them, but they're not nothing. I mean, I had several people say, oh, I'm glad he's okay. I'm glad it was nothing. And I'm like, there are no good heart attacks. But I also, I want to really stress the optimistic with him, you know, not he's completely out of the woods, but it's like, He's I think he's out of the hospital by now. He said this morning he was probably getting out today, and you know, he had a stent put in and he was feeling better and the doctors were feeling hopeful for him. Hey, do you want to stick around for after the break?
Sure.
Okay, cool. We'll be back with more about Bill Buford and how he's getting better and how I'm psyched after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark. Go to michaelwdean.com. That's michaelwdean.com.
Good evening, my fellow
worms. I know some things.
I'll be back with more later on.
I'm never satisfied.
This is Michael Dean After Dark.
Testato sperimentato.
We have enough on
the United States government presents
no vision. Congrats.
Not having enough money.
The power was so great.
Esto por su parte considera
to provide guidance to mankind.
Go to michaelwdean.com for more. That's michaelwdean.com. We'll be back for hour two after this trip to the market on Michael Dean After Dark.
Bye for now.
Go, go, freedom fiends.
Freedom fiends.
Bucket list is full, but I'm going to keep going until they drone me for free speech. And if you want to have a share in our free speech, if you want to call in, our number is 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261. You can also Skype to kittyfeet1. That's kitty like a cat and feet like the thing a cat walks around on. Kitty feet one. So we do take calls, and we have a caller, and it's Nathan from Texas. We're talking about the non-aggression principle and the aggression principle. We believe in the non-aggression principle. All Democrats and Republicans and people all over the world and all the equivalents of those in different countries all believe in the aggression principle. When someone says, hey, let's have a free and open discussion about limited gun control, not taking your guns away, just putting some limits on it. Those people want you dead. They want you in a cage. It's not a free and open discussion. They're statists. And, you know, if they're pro-gun, when they're running for office, they're still not really pro-gun. They still want to take your guns away in some capacity. The only honest politician America's ever had has been Ron Paul, and the GOP went way out of their way to make sure he didn't have a chance. And yeah. I have proof of that. I have recordings of GOP insiders in Wyoming who filmed it. It's on YouTube, and that happened all over the country. Friends of mine were there. So, and I'm not a Ron Paul guy. I'm not a, you know, I didn't want him to win because I like him. And if he'd won, someone in the government probably would have murdered him his first month. As soon as he started dissolving three-letter government agencies, he would have been the new John Kennedy, man. And I like him, and I'd rather have him happy and free and doing a radio show that people don't really listen to and having fun with his grandchildren, his many, many grandchildren. So, Nathan, what's on your mind about the aggression principle?
Well, you've been talking a lot lately about being post-anarchy.
You could have just stopped it. You've been talking a lot lately, Michael.
I was wondering if you could explain a little more what you mean by that.
Okay, I started out a Democrat, a filthy, filthy Democrat, but I wasn't that filthy because I was really lazy. I barely made it to the polls. I didn't always make it to the polls. I didn't really care. I just thought, oh, the nice people are Democrats, the mean people are Republicans. Then I read Boston Tea Party's book, You and the Police, and in one night became a small government libertarian. Now, Nikki was saying, isn't that all libertarians, the small government ones? No, because the word libertarian is literally a word created as an antonym to the word authoritarian. Authoritarians want to control, and libertarians don't want to control. So a libertarian, anything between really, truly small government guy like Ron Paul and straight up anarcho-capitalist or voluntarist is another word for similar thing. Anybody in there, I'd call a libertarian.
I agree with that.
So then I basically became an anarcho-capitalist, which basically means, you know, I took the small government thing to its logical conclusion. Because the small government thing, first of all, most people who say they're small government really aren't. And I was a Republican for a minute. I was a registered Republican. I was rooting for Ron Paul to win, not this time, but the last time. You know, like six years ago. And I was a member of, I was the Wyoming chair of the Republican Liberty Caucus, which is a political group. It's a lobbyist group. It's a political voting organization that tries to get small government Republicans to, you know, to win. And basically, I was working with some Republicans in the state here and got them to fill out surveys, and they answered, and the Republican Liberty Caucus endorsed them. They both won, and one of them, I still like the guy. I go shooting with him sometimes. He's a friend of mine. My state rep turned out to really not be that small government, man. And he is on guns and a couple other things, but he's a politician, man. I like the part of him that's not a politician, but the part of him that's a politician I don't like. And the other lady, the one that was even more real libertarian, she died mysteriously recently, which is kind of weird. She wasn't that old, she wasn't in bad health, and she died, and I'm kind of wondering what happened. So, but before that, I got to like anarcho-capitalist voluntarist, and the reason I say I'm post-anarchist is because anarcho-capitalists spend, most of them that I know, spend an inordinate amount of time talking about politics. And I don't anymore. I don't have any interest in it anymore. Statists are going to state. Haters are going to hate. They're going to do what they're going to do. You cannot petition the Lord of the government with prayer and expect anything. Nikki sent me a thing today. It was like this May Day thing where people are, they're trying to get a rally in DC on May Day to protest the increasing clamping down on the free market in America.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you serious? You're going to ask politicians who by design, by literally job description, what they do is interfere with interstate and international commerce. You're going to try to get those guys to listen to you? No, they're not going to do it. The only way to do it, and you know, some people talk about a bloody revolution and, you know, hang them by the neck from the lamppost. And I'm like, that's just going to be a mess, man. Civil wars are not pretty and family members die no matter what your family is or what side you're on or whether you're on a side or not. I really think the only thing to do is to educate as many people as possible to just reject the whole mess and not feed it.
Yeah, and living outside of the system and solutions.
Yeah, or even a good start is still living within the solution. Pay your taxes, you know, do whatever you do, but just make fun of it every chance you get. And whenever anybody says, well, you know, we need to free birth control because blah, 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 or we need to restrict your guns, or we need to outlaw marijuana, any of that, just laugh at him and say, you're wrong. And Nikki does it in a kind way, and I do it in a kind of mean way, because those people want to kill me. They want to kill me. And that sounds paranoid to those people. They're like, what? We don't want to kill you. We just want to guide you with laws that will, you know. The thing is, these people don't realize that laws aren't just stuff scribbled down on paper. They're not just suggestions. They're not the Ten Commandments.
And, yeah, like, you know, that lady on Free Talk Live who was taking the census poll or whatever.
Yeah, that was great.
I missed it, and we don't have audio of it, so I don't know what you're talking about. Do you want to explain it, or?
Yeah, she was going, basically, an activist was having a conversation with the census lady, and every time he brought up the idea of, well, are you threatening me with force, or what happens if I don't comply, she just jerked her head in a shocked manner, like, I would never do that.
Yeah, and they don't realize that by their very existence, they're doing that. Yeah, most statists don't realize that laws are a threat backed with violence. You know, it's a very bullying concept. They don't get it. They think it's like the Ten Commandments. And I'm not denigrating, you know, Christians or Jews in saying it's like the Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments, you know, religious people say they're enforced by hellfire and brimstone, but on earth, most of them aren't enforced by anything. You know, some of them are. Don't steal, don't kill. But, you know, making graven images or not respecting your mother and father, you know, if you're an adult and you do those things, you're probably not going to go to prison. But, you know, those are suggestions for living. But laws are literally backed with the threat of violence and a cage. And most people don't realize that. And I lived in California for a long time, and you have to understand that is ground zero for idiots who have basically magical thinking about the government. They try to do things like Occupy Wall Street. I mean, they had a basic good idea, like corporatism is horrible. You know, like the government bailing out failing giant banks that rip people off, you know, by like betting that their mortgages will fail, by betting against their customers to rip them off and then being bailed out by the government. That's evil incarnate. But you're not going to get that fixed by petitioning Congress to get money out of politics. Getting money out of politics is like trying to get light out of photography. You can't do it, man. I mean, I guess you could do infrared photography, but that's still a form of light. And so, yeah. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you very much.
Cool,
have a great
man.
Show, Michael.
Thank you for your call, sir.
Awesome. Take have a care. Good night.
Bye, Nathan.
Bye.
So, Nikki.
Yes.
You were going to tell a story about family. Family is the peoples that you hate. So you don't hate your family. I don't hate my family either. I don't know what to say to them.
No, but I feel like they think that there's something wrong with me and that it's like a mental illness. And I think,
well, if you were 10, they'd drug you for it.
Yeah, well, I was never drugged as a kid, but now it gets to the point where my brother will be like, you know, have you seen a doctor? Maybe you need some medicine. And I'm like, why? This disobedient attitude I have, there's something wrong with it? But I mean, I love my family dearly, but they just don't get it. And you have to remember where I live. People here are way more indoctrinated than anywhere else.
Yeah, you live within 100 miles of Washington, D.C., and basically all of your neighbors probably work for the government in some capacity or the other.
Yes, they do, yeah. And so I really have to kind of, when I talk to people about things, I break it down into steps like I did with the previous story. But with someone else in my family, she was, you know, really excited about this whole birth control thing. And I tried to explain to her that it's not free. And she said, well, it is free. And I said, it's not. And the ruling is that, you know, companies have to provide birth control for all their employees. And then I tried to explain private property laws to her. And she said, well, that's not right. It's all employers should give birth control to their employees.
And pills are really cheap, aren't they?
That's how I ended the conversation. I said, you know, you can just go to Walmart and get birth control for $10. And she goes, well, I don't like the generics, and they're like $50. And I'm just like, well, you have a job that gives it to you, so what are you complaining about? It's...
Yeah, I just feel like you'll never get through to these people. And, you know, I don't take it. The thing about, like, my macho libertarian flashism of being like, taking everything to, you know, I'm making fun of myself, but like taking everything to the extreme end of it. You know, I would never say, oh, I think welfare should be cut off because I don't care if babies die. I'll say I think welfare should be cut off because it's immoral and it's counterproductive and it keeps people down. And I will explain how things could work without welfare.
There you go.
But yeah. I would never be mean like that. Like, I think Rush Limbaugh is a horrible person because he called some lady a slut because she wanted free birth control. That is so missing the point.
Yeah. You know?
It's so missing the point on so many levels. We'll be back with more about how we're smarter than most people on Michael Dean After Dark with Nikki Darling.
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and yes, we're broadcasting this message into space. You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Hey, groovy guys and groovy gals. It's Michael Dean After Dark, bringing you the post-government radio broadcast here. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. Do you know what that is, Nikki?
I don't.
Did you ever see Red Dawn?
No.
We're going to answer this phone call, and I'll tell you about it. Hang on a sec. We got to let the cuss dump build. So, Red Dawn, both the old one and the new one. You know the story of them, right?
No, but I'm putting it on my list now.
Watch the old one and the new one. Foreign government attacks America. In the old one, it's Cuba and Russia. It's Russia with Cuba's help. In the new one, it's North Korea. And basically, group of young teenagers and 20-somethings become the guerrilla resistance living in the woods, battling them. And, it's written by a guy who liked guns. And it's kind of like about why you should have guns and some survival training. And it's a good movie. Both of them are good movies, but it's kind of hard to watch, but they're good movies. In it, somebody is broadcasting on the radio. Like, you don't know who it is, but it's like pirate radio from other resistance people. And they're broadcasting music, and then between the music, they say things that sound really cryptic, but it's like coded messages for other resistance people.
Ooh.
And one of them is, John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache. And the other one is, the chair is against the wall.
But
it's kind of imitating stuff that was done in World War II by various armies and nations.
Well, we were talking over the break about this article. It's entitled, Collectivists Posing as Anarchists Demand $3 billion from Google.
Yeah. Now, I can't pull up this site right now. Ben Swan's site is offline. Ben Swan's site is a good site. Ben Swan is, he's not a no government guy, but he's such a small government guy and so good at it that I like him. He's the only person to ever sit down in a room with Barack Obama and ask him on camera, why are you killing so many innocent people with drones, and live to tell about it. Maybe, yeah. Maybe other people may have asked him, but we don't know. He was a Fox News reporter in Cincinnati, and he has left Fox News. I don't really know the details of that. He left on his own.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And now he's running his own website and is basically doing real journalistic and, you know, basically he was too much of a real journalist to make it in mainstream news to not have to leave his job. Or maybe he just left because he wanted to. I don't know. I've interviewed him before, but never got around to asking him that exact bit. I think he couldn't talk about it. I think we asked him and there's some non-disclosure agreement or something maybe. But yeah, his website is probably overwhelmed with traffic right now, but it's benswann.com. That's BENSWANN.com if you want to look at it later. The article, I read it today. It was about a bunch of leftist anarchists, which I don't really understand how they're anarchists, because they want to redistribute all the wealth. And it's like, I don't want my wealth redistributed. So what are they going to do about that? I mean, I can't see how that would work without force. Maybe they think they're going to put me in a room and talk really sweetly to me. And I'm going to say, I want to leave this room. I don't want to listen to you talk. And, you know, at some point, force would be necessary to redistribute the wealth. So I don't agree with them being anarchists.
Well, I have the article pulled up, actually. Huh. It's a group called Counterforce.
Yeah, it's probably George Soros. Okay, I got it up now. Yeah, let's see. Read a little bit of it, Nikki.
Well, Counterforce, it says they take themselves seriously. if Google doesn't acquiesce to their demand, they say to get ready for a revolution, neither you nor we can control. And so what they're going after Kevin Rose, who is the founder of Google and Dig, and they're demanding that he hand over $3 billion to fund the creation of an autonomous anti-capitalist and anti-racist community throughout the Bay Area and Northern California.
Wow.
And it sounds very California-esque to me.
Yeah, and their reasoning is that all the companies, the tech companies that have moved into the Bay Area have driven up the rents.
Yeah.
So basically these people want reparation because they're not property owners and their property is now worth more that they're living in. Yeah.
They're saying with the $3 billion, no one will ever have to pay rent and housing will be free. With this $3 billion from Google, we will solve the housing crisis in the Bay Area and prove to the world that an anarchist world is not only possible, but in fact,
These people give anarchists a bad name, but I would love to see the spreadsheet of their math of where that $3 billion would go. We'll be back with more about the silliness and pie-in-the-sky-ness that is so rampant in Northern California.
You're listening to Michael Dean After Dark, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
Well,
Well, I love you so much that I wish you were dead or locked up down in some jail. Because if you were dead, you'd be underground and not squeaking under my friends. What do you think of those lyrics, Nikki?
Very poetic.
Very, I've been done wrong. That was back when I was put myself in situations to get done wrong a lot. I love you so much that I wish you were dead or locked up down in some jail. Because if you were dead, you'd be underground and not squeaking under my friends.
Wow, yes, you were done wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the chorus of that song says, I want to be your heroine, the one you'll always miss. I want to be something about slitting wrists. I can't remember, man. That was my that's my dark past, and I'm in a better mood this decade.
Good.
This 20-year period. So we're talking about the collective. We're collectivizing the collectivists of Northern California who want to – they're basically holding Google hostage, and I think Google is probably going to – laugh at them or maybe give them $100 in a bong and they'll go away. Now, here's the thing. I'm not Rush Limbaugh sitting in New York City or Florida, like in my million-dollar mansion criticizing these people. I used to be one of them. I moved to San Francisco from Virginia in 1986, and I left San Francisco in 2001 and moved to LA and then met my wife, and then we lived there a few years. And then moved to Wyoming. Moved here in 99. No, 2000. I don't know. 4 years ago, whenever that was. Math was not my best suit. So these people are demanding that Google give them billions of dollars for reparations for driving up taxes or something. First of all, property prices in San Francisco went up before Google was a thing. It went up. They went up in like 94 when dot-coms started happening there. And I worked there, and instead of complaining, what I did was went and got a job at a dot-com making $30 an hour with my feet up on the table. And I was like the lowest paid person at this company. And there were like 15 people making $30 an hour with their feet up on the table with no discernible, you know, with no diplomas. And it's a company that was being given wave after wave of money from venture capitalists, and that company went out of business after 2 years. Their plan was, they were called Catalogs to Go, and their plan was to take every paper physical catalog in America and write little descriptions of it, 30-word descriptions, and that was my job, was writing, like, look at the catalog for 5 minutes, then write a pithy description of it.
Okay.
And then their business model was that companies would pay them to list their catalogs, and then people could enter their address once and look through their website and click on catalogs they wanted, and they'd instantly get them, you know, sent to them in the mail. So basically they were trying to like automate for grandmas and grandpas using the web to get snail mail catalogs. And they didn't foresee, you know, Amazon, I guess.
Yeah.
So they went out of business, but they had a more solid business plan than other companies that got millions and millions in funding. So, you know, the venture capitalists kind of learned their lesson. Like back then you could get millions of dollars by just scribbling a business plan on a napkin. If you had like one guy with a Harvard MBA and one guy with a Harvard computer science degree, like those two things together and a really flimsy business plan and you were set. They learned their lessons, and then they only funded real things that made money, like Google and Apple and Microsoft and Dig and Twitter and things like that.
Yeah.
Things that still don't – how does Twitter make money? There's no ads on it. I guess there's ads on it now, but I never look at them, and they're pretty easy to ignore.
I have no idea.
Yeah, it's like, oh, the internet, everything's free and everyone gets rich. That was the plan in 94, 95, 96, 97. But that drove up rents immensely. Like when I first moved to San Francisco in 86, I was paying like $150 a month rent, living in a house with four other losers. And like I was working 10 hours a week. I was glad to work. I was working 10 hours a week for a bar, putting up their flyers. Just basically I was getting paid to ride my bicycle and get in free to a bar and see bands I liked. And I mean, bands that were like, I saw Scream at this bar. I saw Gwar at this bar. I mean, Scream was like Dave Grohl on drums. You know, I saw bands like that in rooms with 100 people. I saw Bad Religion. I saw, you know, De Kreutzen. I saw all these old cool bands. And Nirvana played that bar one night, but I was like, I don't want to go see that. You know, I stayed home. I was like, I don't want to go across town to see that. See, I've heard them. I don't want to see them play in a room full of 100 people that people will be like, there were like 100 people there. And like years later, like 10, like now there's like 500 people who claim they were at that show. And I'm not, I'm not one of them. So, yeah, the .com thing, man, here's the thing. These hippies should get a job because they're complaining that Google has driven their rent up. They should either do what I did, which is get a job working in the .com world and make a lot of money,
or move,
which I also did. At one point I had to move out of my house and I was rent controlled and I couldn't afford, I'd lived in the same place for 7 years and I was paying $550 a month to live at Bush and Powell, which is kind of nice, kind of crappy, but kind of nice. And, I didn't have money to move anywhere else in San Francisco. So I moved to LA and I instantly started making a living writing. And I, not too long after that, met my wife, and she's the love of my life. And so if I'd stayed in San Francisco, I would have stayed in my rut. So these people are basically asking, demanding that someone who actually has a business plan fund their non-business plan and keep them in their rut. That's my analysis of this. What about you?
I don't know about being in a rut, but it seems like they want something that's not theirs, and that is the definition of socialism right there, and not really anarchism.
Yeah, and socialism involves a big government gun. I mean, basically, you can't have socialism without killing or starving the dissenters if you're the government.
Yeah, and they didn't bring up the use of government in this article, and I'm not sure if the protesters would actually go that route, but still, they're acting like the government.
Well, I don't know what their plan for revolution is because they're anarchists, and so that means I'm assuming they understand that means you don't go to your government to get things done. And if they're violent, what is their violence? They're people, they all hate guns. So none of those people have guns, and if they do, they certainly don't have rifles or any skill with a rifle. And no revolutions are fought with pistols and won. They all require rifles and distance and accuracy and power. So
maybe they'll just sit outside of the Google building for months.
I think they're going to occupy the Google building. But the Google building is not in San Francisco. It's down in whatever town down in
Valley.
Silicon Valley, yeah. They won't have the bus money to get there and back to be smelly.
No, they can all hitchhike.
Yeah, but how are they going to – they're going to starve, you know, basically. So – that happened a lot in the 60s too. A lot of hippies who were pie in the sky about getting back to nature, like bought some land in rural Oregon and went out to the land and friggin' starved to death or got eaten by bears because they didn't have guns. That's actually in the movie Easy Rider. There's a scene where they ride their motorcycles to a friend's commune and like the people are literally starving, and that happened. That literally happened. So I don't know what their plan is. I mean, they sound like they're threatening violence. Are they going to like throw bricks at windows? The San Francisco police are brutal. I mean, you don't have to throw a brick through a window to get just bulldozed by those guys, because basically they've lived in the shadow of the LAPD forever, and the LAPD have a worldwide reputation as bone breakers. And the SFPD are like, we're not thithies. We can beat people up too.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh. That's terrible. I mean, the brick throwing, I hope it doesn't come to that, but it's really frustrating to me that anarchists are seen as brick throwers or Molotov cocktail throwers, and just not how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, there have been historically a few people who called themselves that, like the Haymaker Riot back in the 1800s, but a lot of that was manufactured by the government, and names were given and false flags, things happened. The thing that I don't understand about San Francisco is why it's still standing, because you'd think it would look like Detroit now, and it's actually still a pretty nice city. I think it's because there's enough grown-ups there. I think it's because what happened was in the 60s, the hippies that had the plans to run the businesses to change the world started those businesses and were quickly weeded out. Like basically you know, the Steve Jobses of the world became billionaires and created wealth and created jobs, and other people did similar things and made a lot of money. And you had this whole Silicon Valley thing happen, which is vastly influences San Francisco, and it exists a lot in San Francisco, which is why the rents are higher there. But it doesn't look like Detroit. San Francisco is not broken window central. It's not unemployment central. It's not murder central. It's not, you know, nobody graduates from high school. Everyone's on welfare central. I mean, you have some of all of that in San Francisco, but not nearly to the extent of Detroit. And I think what it is Detroit also, both of them have – here's the thing too. Like San Francisco just kind of has this – the politicians there just basically have a socialist attitude with their own citizens. But Detroit's politicians and unions kind of had a socialist attitude with the whole country, which is why Detroit was the richest city in the world, richest city in America for decades.
Yeah.
And now it's literally the poorest and the most run down. But San Francisco's probably headed there, but it's still a lovely city, man. I don't understand why it's not in ruins. But
yeah, but eventually a lot of big cities, I think, will go down because they're going to run out of other people's money.
Yeah.
Eventually when people stop working because there's no motivation to work anymore.
Which is a real big reason why so many leftists get so upset when conservatives or libertarians or anarcho-capitalists talk about secession. You know, like when Texas talked about secession, or when all these states that don't like Obama talk about secession, they don't like that because that's where a lot of the tax money comes from, you know?
Yeah, but the, you know, you worry about with secession whether or not they're going to become their own little tyranny afterwards.
Oh, they would. I'm not a states' rights guy. I'm not a, we need to enforce the 10th and 9th and 10th Amendment. It's like, come on, man. Really? They're all nullified by the rest of the Constitution anyway. You know, everybody who says, we need to get back to the Constitution, most of them haven't read it, or they've only read the Bill of Rights. I've read the whole Constitution line by line and understand it very well, and there's a few weasel words in there, but there's a lot of just straight out, we can do whatever we want, we're the government.
Yeah, I still have my pocket constitution from government high school.
You should read it, man. It's it's an interesting read, and it doesn't say what most small government people think it says. It basically is set up to bring us to what we are at right now. We'll be back with more after this trip to the market.
You are destined to be listening to this show, Michael Dean After Dark, on this very night. Thank you for arriving.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
When the morning comes, I will not raise my head. If I die before I wake, I pray someone my soul to take. That's the lyrics to that song. Boy, I wrote some cheery lyrics back in the day, huh, Nikki Darling?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, the next line that is, I'd swim all the way to Hamburg on the only tear I cried for you today. Yeah, I was a poetic, tortured little genius in San Francisco. I was in San Francisco then. So I think the name of this episode is going to be Hippies Aren't All Bad, Just Mostly. Because you were saying you're kind of hippie in some ways. You have some, I guess, indicators of what people think a hippie is. What are they?
Yeah. Just like the natural products I use. I don't know, the peace and love attitude, loving animals.
You wear pretty clothes and jewelry, and you make jewelry.
Yeah.
A lot of hippies make jewelry.
Yeah, I make jewelry.
Yeah, but you don't think that the government should make people buy your jewelry or pay you to make it or pay you if you're not selling it.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. And, nope. and you do sell it.
Yep.
Yep. So hippies. Hippies, man. Bill Buford actually says he's got some hippie in him, which is would be really surprising to a lot of people, I think, because he's a retired Army officer. A lot of people who were in the military are kind of hippie, especially in the 60s because they were drafted.
Yep.
But he signed up willingly and he rose to the level of officer and then retired and then went and worked as a consultant for them. And he's a very yes sir, no sir, you know, military time, like, oh, I'll meet you at 1400 on the radio kind of guy. Mm-hmm. You know, so that doesn't seem very hippie, but you know, he likes jazz music and he likes art. And, I guess he is kind of hippie. That's a good
yeah.
thing. Yeah.
Well, one thing about hippies, I remember as a teenager, we went to San Francisco on a family trip and my dad pulls out his video camera and it was big bulky ones back in the 90s. And we were at Haight-Ashbury because I really wanted to go there. And we're standing outside. My dad's filming and this hippie guy comes up and threatens my dad and then grabs the camera and throws it to the ground.
That's not very peaceful.
Not at all. Not. He was so scared. He rushed us out of there in a cab.
Yeah. But, you know, if you live at Haight and Ashbury, you should probably expect to be filmed by tourists.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I lived about 7 blocks from Haight and Ashbury. I lived at Divisadero and Fell for many, many, many years.
Oh, okay.
And it was kind of a, you know, kind of like halfway between Golden Gate Park and the crack-infested hood. And kind of it had geographically and spiritually halfway between those two neighborhoods. It was really far from Pacific Heights, but on real estate maps, they lied and called it Lower Pacific Heights. And after we saw that, we called it Pacific Depths. Yeah, hippies, man. I remember I used to ride by the methadone clinic, not the methadone clinic, the welfare office down on Harrison Street. And somebody had written in wet cement there, Bank of Hell. I thought that was pretty funny. It's kind of true, man. The Bank of Hell.
Yeah.
Yep. So hippies, can't live with them, can't reason with them. Hey. Yeah, I'm anti-war and pro-gun. That's my description for my extent of my hippieism.
Yeah, and that is not what hippies you know, think about the pro-gun thing, but yeah, I'm anti-war, pro-gun also. So
hippies are really delusional about life because they really think that they can appeal to politicians to protect them from bad things. And that's like saying, that's like asking the mafia for protection, except the mafia might actually listen if you're, you know, if you're paying them money. I guess the politicians listen too if you're paying them money. Hey, speaking of guns, I'm not bringing a gun with me to Porkfest because I don't want to travel on a plane with a gun because a number of reasons, including that you are basically registering your gun because they will write down the serial number when they examine it. But
yeah,
I'm borrowing a gun from a friend and it's his spare gun that belongs to his wife and it is a pink handled revolver. I'm going to be open carrying a pink gun at Porkfest.
Wow. Well, awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of like the bad tie they lend you at a good restaurant or something.
Yeah. There should be like a rental service at Porkfest for people who can't travel with their guns. And
somebody
most people
would make a lot of money or Bitcoin or silver doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think some people have walked around with just their holsters because they, you know, couldn't bring their guns. But
that looks like you're saying, look at me. I'm disarmed. I'd rather not carry a holster than I'd rather walk around with a knife than an empty holster.
Yeah, but there are some people who imbibe a little too much and probably shouldn't have their guns on them.
Maybe their friends took it away from them, like you take your friend's keys away when he's too drunk to drive.
Maybe, but I don't think I would ever take anyone's gun away.
All right. Say worms.
Worms.